Hello, everybody. Welcome to Wholehearted Loving. I'm Stephanie.
Hi, I'm Georgiana.
Today, we're going to talk about the feeling of being personally attacked. But before we do that, we're going to do a body-based self-connection practice to connect with ourselves before we connect with each other in this podcast.
So we were trying to think of what to share with you and what to walk you through. And I noticed that Stephanie and I were both rocking. So we're going to do a little bit of that, but it's going to have a little maybe playful element to it, a little bit of imagination. So we're going to imagine that we're boats.
Ooh.
And maybe just move for a second. It won't be for too long, as if you're an unanchored boat in a storm. And then slowly you discover it might be helpful to throw down the anchor and feel a little bit more rooted, a little bit sturdier. So imagining just lowering the anchor. And it's also helping because I think the storm is subsiding. So you slowly actually get to feeling some calm, where your boat is not rocking as much. And you're really feeling the benefits of being anchored down into the lake or the sea. Notice what that does to your breath. And then now you get to just enjoy the lapping of the waves. So you're very sturdily anchored. I don't know if that's the word, but we'll use it. But you also, so you get to enjoy the feeling of feeling anchored, and there's spaciousness for movement. And just notice how that feels in your body to get to experience both. So it's not this rigidness and stuffed in a box feeling. It's I feel sturdy. And what might help is to really feel that anchoring point in your butt if you're sitting, or your feet on the ground. And feeling that, and then allowing for that rocking motion to happen. And if you're paying attention and you're willing to trust your body will naturally rock in a way that feels comforting. And if you can connect to the part of you that's enjoying that, just allow yourself to notice how your body lets you know you're enjoying this movement. And see if you can be with that for one breath, that spot in your body that tells you, this feels good. Maybe it's not so much enjoyment, but just a neutral feeling. We're learning to allow ourselves to enjoy neutral as well. And if it's terrible, hopefully you've changed and done something that feels better than terrible. And then I find that after connecting to a practice that feels good for me, then my body has new ideas of what it wants and what it needs. And so I just follow.
Well, appropriately, I feel personally attacked by your self-connection practice for us this morning. That was really interesting for me. And brought up a lot internally, actually, which was probably an apt metaphor for things that are happening for me in my life and in my body connection. The feeling of being anchored in a storm feels like a nightmare from hell. I'm like, pull up the anchor. Let's get out of here. I need the freedom to move. This feels like dangerous and scary. I don't know boats. I don't know if you're supposed to be anchored in a storm or have the anchor up, but it brought up so much for me internally.
And that's when good to notice. Yeah.
Right? When the water calms,
Mm-hmm. What happened when the water calmed?
I felt that, like, this holdover of anxiety of wanting the freedom to move. And then I had to picture a really specific beach in Mexico with calm waters that you can see the bottom of and, like, chill beachgoers. And I was like, okay, I could be anchored here.
Mm. I love it. I love that you noticed what came up and you noticed a way of, like, what if I add this and tweak this? Right? That's what's great about noticing what happens when you follow instructions, someone else's guidance. Do you just follow it with no regard for its impact on you and you don't tweak anything? Or are you willing to notice what comes up and either choose to lean in to exactly the way it's being described just to see what that experience is like and what might come up? Or are you feeling like the need to practice saying, no, like, I need to tweak this a little bit for me? Mm-hmm. Right. So yeah. All of that information you can get just from following along to something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know anything about boats either. And it might be a very bad idea to anchor in a storm. And it's good to notice, like, when I think about the metaphor of life, when you said, I just want to get out, right? Sometimes maybe there is no getting out, or not in the way that we want, in the middle of a storm in life, right? So if you can't get out, how do you find anchoring in your life in the midst of storm? And then how do you, when it feels like there's a spaciousness to raise up the anchor and get the heck out of there when there is more opportunity to get out? Mm-hmm. And also, what I didn't realize this when I was explaining or, like, sort of guiding us, but what's neat is you said, like, we went pretty fast from storm. And then all of a sudden I said, you know, imagine the storm is subsiding. It's fine now. And you found it maybe a little bit jarring to go from storm to, like, all of a sudden calm. But you found a way. You're like, if I imagine this beach and imagine this, then that makes it easier to connect to calm. And it reminded me of one practice we've done in conscious relationship training where we were asked and guided to move from what were the four feelings? Anger. Like, what was the order of them? Do you remember? Anger, sadness, guilt, and joy.
Joy.
And I remember my first time doing this thinking, like, a little bit like, this seems very contrived. And also, is it even possible to truly feel each one of these things that deeply, that quickly, and then to move on from them? Because it was only a few minutes with each one. And I remember we were given feedback from the group of how authentic they felt that our expression of that emotion was. And so if you are just, like, pretending, people feel that energy and they're going to let you know. And what surprised me about that exercise was when I did it, was I really did feel each one of those distinct experiences. And also, I was able to shift in a short amount of time. I was doing an exercise. I was given the task. I was, you know, and so I always remember that exercise. I remember it because I find it so helpful, because sometimes it's easy to get stuck in a dark feeling, a dark experience. And we think, like, well, my circumstances haven't changed, so I guess I'm doomed to feel this way forever for a really long time. And that exercise reminds me of how we can shift our emotional experience and our nervous system state in a very short period of time by acting as if, just for a moment, right? It's not like pretending that things that you're feeling don't exist. But I feel like it was helpful for me. It's a muscle to grow, to be able to flow in and out of experiences and not to always be stuck in one.
And well, that's how I felt with the boat and the anchor, right? I'm like, there's two ways to think about anchoring. There's grounding, anchoring, solidity, sturdiness, good feeling. And there's the feeling of being trapped and caught in one place, you know? I want to bounce through the waves to whatever comes next, which I think is probably a great metaphor for things I avoid in real life.
Amazing. This reminds me of another practice we'll share one day, maybe at the end of this podcast or maybe another time, of how to be with things you cannot change.
Yeah.
In a body way.
Yeah, definitely. I think I might tend towards, I mean, there's a lot I can change, and there's experiences I want to be creating in my life. So if I can change something to make it more of what I want it to be, I'll probably do that, which could then lean me away from going deeper into a situation that might be challenging and finding the gold that's in there. Mm. I think that's kind of what I've got wrapped up in this boat anchor metaphor as well.
That's neat. You were saying something about, is it something prevents you from going deeper into something sometimes, or is that a pattern you notice?
Yeah, power to change. I think I can misuse, is that the right word? I might overly lean into my ability to create circumstances and change circumstances, as opposed to going deeper into a circumstance that might not feel great and changing it from the inside.
I think that's such an important thing to highlight. I think it speaks to different strengths we all have, right? It sounds like you're saying, hey, I have a strength to really make things different, to change things. And that's a great strength to have. And at the same time, if you use that one all the time, you're going to miss out on growing that ability to stay in some of the discomfort, to discover what the gems are in that, and also miss out on growing that belief in yourself that you can sit in those yuckier feeling things, right? And I might have a different skill set in that, like I can sit in stuff for maybe longer. I can see what, I can see maybe the gifts of hanging out and exploring that darker stuff. But I might not lean as quickly to let's change the situation. And it'll differ based on, you know, what's going on in my life and what area of my life this is relating to. But I think it's just neat to notice, hey, do you tend to be like, let's problem solve and fix and change the situation, right? Or let's sit and discover and explore and feel my way through this bit. I have a client who says, I'm really good at picking up and taking off and reestablishing myself in different places and like growing a really neat and fulsome life. But when we started working together, she says, I want to learn how to stay. I want to learn how to stay in one place. Like there's nothing wrong with being able to pick up and establish yourself in different places and create a great life. But she's like, I also know part of that is avoiding things. And I want to grow my capacity and my also self-identity. She said, I've identified myself now as someone who just picks up and goes when things are hard. And I want to have part of my self-identity as someone who can also stay when things are hard.
Right.
And that I can also create a fulsome life in staying in something that feels mucky.
Right.
And so, yeah, just a neat thing that she wanted to try out and practice.
That is neat. Yeah, I think I'm both of those. And I tend to believe that there are going to be unchangeable things over which I have no control and which feel icky. And so it's like I want to conserve all of my staying and going deeper energy for those times. And I want to move when I can, kind of thing. But I think I'm in danger of moving so much I forget how to stay. You know, that's possible too. Good note to practice.
Yeah, and I've worked with people who are so good at staying and not moving. But the impact is like just like dreadful depression. And soul so destroyer. They want to practice learning how to move and get up and do something. Rather than sit and feel only.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
So
personal attacks. This saying that's around the world these days, I feel personally attacked, which we say, you know, facetiously when something resonates with us. Mm-hmm. And I think there's so much gold there that in the facetiousness too, you know, it's easy to be facetious and silly and be like, oh, I'm attacked, and never go deeper into, you know, what's actually lurking there. But moreover, I think there's so much gold in discovering genuinely for ourselves in what areas of life or relationship or work or whatever it is, where do you tend to feel legitimately personally attacked and like defensive and reactive, and discovering all of the magic that's in there for you.
Yeah. That actually made me laugh because it brought back a real life scenario of when I felt personally attacked, and boy, I was not happy.
You want to tell us the story?
Mm-hmm. So it was with an ex-partner, and he had said something about not feeling supported by me, and almost immediately, like, I could feel the fire rise up, and I was thinking, and I probably said, are you, and some not nice words, like, serious right now? You don't feel supported by me. And in that moment, I was not a very good listener. Like, there was no space holding. It was just a very reactive moment. And I think I was just in disbelief and shock that he would say that, and that that was what he was experiencing. And I probably in my mind and out loud said all the ways that I felt that I was supporting this person. And when I sort of sat with it a little bit more on my own, I think that's one thing I can say I'm very proud of myself for, is when I have those moments where I feel personally attacked and I might be reactive, I do go back at some point and try to be curious, like, why? What did that hit on for me? And what I noticed when I went back to that was, I actually support too much. I actually have given too much support in too many areas in ways that go beyond a partner. And that's what rubbed me so hard. I'm like supporting you in all of these ways, taking you and your family into consideration in all of these ways. And like, you're sitting here saying, I don't support you. And I could see how I'm like, I probably pushed past my own boundaries. I probably have now taken over some of the responsibility instead of letting him deal with stuff that he needs to deal with. And it was a good reminder of like, I think what I need to do is pull back and actually not support in these ways that I think are like beyond what's fitting for our relationship and the dynamic we want to have together. And when we spoke about it later, he could see that perspective. He's like, yeah, I think that in your desire to help and support and from a very loving place, you have done so much and helped in so many ways. But he could also see, like, we're not connecting in that partner way anymore. It's like becoming more like mother, coach, all this stuff that, you know, I'd be happy to do for someone in the right setting, in the right roles, but it didn't feel good in this one. And yeah, it was just a good recalibration moment of noticing, in what way do I want to support this person? And what way is like something he needs to look for outside of our relationship from somebody else?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a huge one. Overgiving and that not being appreciated for whatever reasons. And then feeling like, oh my God, I've given and done so many things and you don't even appreciate it. And it feels so personal. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, I don't know if you remember this specifically, but when he brought up feeling unsupported, do you remember if he said, I don't feel supported by you, or I don't feel like you're very supportive?
I think it was like, you don't support me.
Ah. So,
and I was like,
a personal attack.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I think what he was trying to say was, I need you to stop and just listen to my frustrations. And
that would have been helpful.
And probably what he might have wanted to say was, I feel stressed out about a lot of things I don't tell you about.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to do with that energy.
Yeah. Man, yeah. We so quickly go to inadvertent attacks and attacking words and taking things personally and feeling hurt. And it's genuinely such an unusual thing, you know, all things considered. It's pretty unusual for us to be trying to hurt each other just from a neutral place, you know? Like, it makes sense that we make jabs at each other if we're in a jabby kind of a space. You know, I feel attacked, so I'm going to attack you back kind of thing. But just an out-of-nowhere attack is, like, very unusual and sociopathic. So mostly we're just operating in these defended desires for connection kind of ways of being. And, you know, our choice of words and whatever we're harboring personally of our own fears and desires or unmet needs just informs everything that happens in our relationships.
Yeah. Like, I think when I think back to, I think one thing we did really well was to revisit sort of these little blow-ups. And we could always, when we remembered again that we're not out to attack each other, that there's probably something else we were trying to say, right? So we would go back to, I think what I was trying to say is this. I think what I really wanted you to know or understand is this. And when you can speak using prompts like that, you get closer to the actual truth. And that's when we had our best conversations. It would be nice if you didn't need to have your best conversations on the tail end of conflict all the time. That's something I've learned, though.
Yeah, that's an important one, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm curious, for those listening or watching, what areas get your back up? Where do you feel like you must defend yourself? I can think of so many innocuous phrases my mother's used over the years that I took to be personal attacks, and that, you know, we're not. We're maybe innocent questions or perhaps quite directed questions, but still not attacks, you know. But whatever part of me was feeling attackable or vulnerable or unsupported, I think we have such a big biological response to that and a physiological response that is really valuable to look at.
Are there obvious ones that you notice now, or ones that used to be like quite prickly and aren't as much anymore?
One that came up for me as I was thinking about this was feeling like fraudulent feelings. There's something about some unattainable expertise that I desire or expect. There's a place where I can get to in whatever it is, an industry or a, I don't know, an art form or, you know, whatever I'm invested in. There's a level that I can get to where I feel like completely comfortable and unflappable in the face of anybody's questions. But until I get to that point, I'm completely flappable. You know, if somebody's questioning my abilities, the heat will rise for sure. You know, the desire to defend and explain. And that has unwound so significantly over the years. I remember at some point it was defined for me that an expert is somebody who knows, but it's also somebody who knows where to get the information when they don't know. That was really helpful for me to hear. But I think we all have expectations of expertise, and then layer that with our personal expectations of ourselves and our fears about who we are or what we're lacking or who we should be. And it's this beautiful triple-decker sandwich of potential feelings of attack, which is great to notice as well. I think fraudulent feelings are pretty common for people.
I think it's very common for people. You know, many people who have reached the, you know, on the outside, the highest of places, professionally, academically, whatever, will still often say I'll have imposter syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I definitely had my own version of like, I hated being questioned about, or someone saying like that I didn't know something or know how to do something so similar. And I would, I think, at all costs try to avoid ever being in a position where someone might discover what I didn't know or didn't know how to do. And it's, I laugh, you know, in a sweet way at myself now when I think about that, because the words, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know how to do that. You're right. I really don't know. I don't understand. Seem like they roll off my tongue so easily at any moment that it's hard to remember who I was before, when it would mortify me to have to say something like that. I would hate it. And now it just feels very free to be able to say, I have no idea. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm not even interested in finding out. You know, it used to be, oh God, I don't know. And I feel put upon and I better go figure it out and get back to you. And now I'm like, oh, I don't know. That's not my jam.
Mm-hmm. Right. Another one for me is when people couldn't see my good intentions. And I think it was like, I don't know, when I'm talking to you about this, it makes me see that I have a theme, I think, of overgiving, overdoing, over caring, and not being seen in it, and then feeling really pissed off and hurt about it. And I remember, like, if people couldn't see that I was well-intentioned and assumed I was like being mean or being thoughtless and careless, I would feel so upset, because I'm like, I have actually considered everything that could cross my mind as potentially not nice for you, and tried to pretzel my way around doing the thing, making the choice that might be best for you. Of course, without consulting you at all, because it's just my own inner process. Mm-hmm. For you to now think that I'm not well-intentioned, like, screw you.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, they have no idea that any of this has happened. But yeah, and I think what it reminds me of, or what, you know, so what it sort of triggers up for me is being a young child and feeling like I'm trying so hard, and no matter what I do, it's not good enough.
Yeah.
Right. And feeling. So I think for me, for someone to see my good intentions has always felt very important. Now it feels important, but not like a personal attack when someone doesn't see it.
Yeah. Well, I think you nailed it right there, that feeling of being a helpless or unappreciated child. Like, it just makes me want to burst into tears with, like, the feeling of unfairness, you know? And that's what's coming up for us in adult form, with more and bigger words and more ego. Things get prickly.
As you say this, it makes me think about why I felt so personally attacked when he had said, you aren't supporting me, or feel like you aren't supporting me. Because I realized I had the same pattern growing up with my parents. I feel like I was the mediator, always supporting everyone's well-being, supporting them to understand each other. And it was like way above and beyond what a child is supposed to do. And it was never enough. And so I can see how I carried that pattern of overextending and care and support in relationships as well, because that's what I knew. Like, that's where my value came from, was to offer support, and an unending amount of support in every area of your life. Because maybe if I support you enough, you will love me and keep me. And also, maybe if I support you enough, you will be stable and consistent enough to actually be there for me.
Right. Yeah.
All that fun stuff. When all we think we're just being nice to someone.
Nope. Yeah, there's always much in there. I can feel attacked by semantics, I want to say. Choice of words, I can find a lot of reactivity within. So, like, my deepest desire is for people to get down to the most basic feelings descriptions. You know, so I feel sad or I feel afraid or I feel angry or helpless or, you know, these things. If somebody was to say to me, I feel attacked, my back would get up right away because I would think, well, then that would require that I'm attacking you. So I'm not. So what's going on here? And, you know, as opposed to them saying, you know, I'm feeling really vulnerable and frightened right now. That I feel like I've got all the space and patience in the world for. But the minute it turns into any kind of language that I could then turn that personalness around back on me, I got to watch for that for sure.
It's good that you notice which things are, I got to watch for that for sure. I think that's a huge part of this work, is to not never be reactive, never take anything personally, but to know what your hot buttons are, right? You know, so you know going in, just pay attention. I remember someone, and I think I've been in similar positions as what you described, and I was somewhere at, you know, a large personal growth kind of seminar thing, and someone had said something that really touched me. He said, he got up on the stage and he said, you know, I've been listening to many people come up on stage all weekend long, really sharing vulnerable pieces. And what I notice is when you share vulnerably, there's a part of me that softens and a part of me that sees your innocence and how we might have commonalities. And I'm just softer towards you. I noticed that, he said. But he's like, what I'm struck by is, all of a sudden, then I can have more curiosity towards you and have more a heart opening towards you. He's like, what I'm realizing now is we all have a story like that. We all have vulnerabilities. It's just that some of you haven't shared on stage yet, or some of you are too afraid to share that part of you still. And he said, my old way of being is I don't allow myself to connect to you and soften to you until you've shown me your vulnerability. He's like, something I would like to shift into is just assuming that, like me, you are just as vulnerable. And even if you haven't shared yet or might never share that vulnerability with me, that I can still look at you and view you through that lens of my heart is open to you and I'm curious about you. And that really stayed with me because, you know, like, yeah, wouldn't it be nice if everyone we interacted with could come from that vulnerable place instead of from that attacking place or using words that we experience as attacking? That would be great. And also, what would it be like if we could just know that everybody has that place in them and sometimes aren't able or ready yet to share from that place?
Yeah. Personally attacked in this moment. Yeah, I need to cultivate more of that thing that man described. And I also would love if everyone but me could just get it together and make things easier for me in every way. Okay.
I love your honesty. I love this honesty is so important because it just is like revealing the humanness in us. Don't we all sometimes wish that everyone else could change and I could just be the same and life would be easier for me? I think we do, yeah. If we're honest. Right? Do we actually expect that life works that way? You know, I don't. Maybe you do sometimes.
There's boundaries, obviously. But I think what I struggle with in, it's not that I can't view other people who are not behaving in vulnerable ways as being vulnerable humans. It's more like, where is the line with how and where I open and offer my heart, you know, because vulnerable humans can behave just in horrible ways to each other, you know, and I've been burned for sure. And yeah, where's the line?
I don't think it's that black and white, right? Yeah. And I also think that it's learning how to discern like how much of yourself to give to someone at any particular point based on how the interaction is feeling and what they're contributing to the dynamic, right? And also ultimately, what kind of relationship do you want with this person? And do you see that this person puts in some sort of effort or a mutual sort of effort going the other way? Mm-hmm. Right? Like when I think about a stranger, I know it helps me, like even if I want no relationship with this person ever, it helps me to imagine them as like just a person having a hard time. It doesn't mean I wouldn't set any boundaries, but it makes the experience worse for me if I sit there and stew and I'm like, you're just an asshole trying to make my life crappy. That doesn't actually help me feel better, right? It, for me, it helps me feel better that like, you must be a person having a really hard time right now. Like, I'm not okay with that behavior and I'm going to leave the situation, right? And I hope whatever's going on with you gets settled somehow. That feels better for me.
That's so much easier to do with a stranger than with close loved ones. God damn it.
God damn it. With a close loved one, I have more. And I think this comes from parenting. You get attacked all the time as a parent.
Oh, God. Oh, I don't know if I'd survive.
Or not. I mean, maybe not everyone has this experience as a parent, but I definitely have had this experience where kids just say stuff. They're fully expressed, you know, if they have felt that safety. And depending on the temperament of your child, like, they might be quite explosive, expressive, right? And I have found that it always helps me and my children if I can just stick to, they're having a hard time right now. What is it that they need? How can I come in, at least not add more fire to the situation? Right? And there's been many times where if I just wanted to take the actual words that came out of my kids' mouths and correct it and battle it out on that sentence, we could have gone to town with it and just been so mad at each other and said such awful things to each other. But it didn't make sense to take that route. Like, why? So I've tried to look beneath the words. And that's like when I work with parents and families, we always look at like, let's not get into a power struggle over the words. What's beneath the words? What is this kid actually trying to tell you? Yeah. If he or she could say, what I really want you to know right now is, right? What's really hard for me right now is, that's just an easier place for me to go to than to have a power struggle over words.
Yeah.
And then I try to take that. That came more easily for me to do because I could see the innocence and the underdeveloped brain of a child to do that with a kid. And a lot of things in parenting really helped me in relationship. And when I talk to people, they're like, yeah, I can do that for my kid, but I don't want to do that for my husband. He's a grown ass man. And, you know, I get that. And also, it's the same dysregulation that's happening. It's the same lack of skills that you're seeing in this grown person that you see in a five-year-old sometimes, oftentimes. So I find that if I can do that, I can access that more easily when I'm working with my kids. I'm like, that's a really great skill set to take into adult relationship, intimate relationship, and family members. But can I take some of that over there? Just assume that whatever my mom said or did or dad said or did or partner said or did is because they're having a hard time. Because generally speaking, when they're feeling pretty okay, they don't say things like this to me, right? They don't do things like this. And that's something I've had to practice.
Yeah. So I think actually this is the point where I kind of get confused is the differences between people and what we feel and how we feel it. Sometimes I'm finding I only have words to go on. You know, I can make my assumptions about what a person might be feeling. And they might be feeling it or not feeling it, and it might be conscious or unconscious. They might be feeling something they're not aware they're feeling, and I'm sensing that they're feeling that, but then they're telling me this other whole set of things with their words, and I'm just like, what? And then I just feel confused, and if they were five, it would be easy, but if they're an adult, especially if I have any, you know, reasonable I think I have both reasonable and unreasonable expectations. I mean, if I have expectations based on some facts or history or something that makes, you know, objective sense, if we're deviating outside of that, I can just feel so like befuddled and confused. And then, so I genuinely don't know where to go and how to relate with that person.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to like put myself in that position and think of what happens for me. I think that ultimately you really do only have what someone is willing to give you in actions and in words, right? However, I think maybe the difference I see is the first words and the first actions I never take as the truth and the authentic ones. And so I try to go in with some openness and curiosity to what is underneath that set of actions and words, because I know this person and I know that if they were feeling connected in our friendship or connected in our relationship and they're feeling pretty regulated and resourced, they wouldn't do these things or they wouldn't talk to me that way. They wouldn't say these words to me. Like, there's times where you're like, no, this person just says mean things. That's a, like, and they say mean things often, right? I don't ever really experience a time where they don't say mean things. That's a very different situation than when you have a certain rapport and relationship with someone where you know, hey, like, when all is pretty okay with them, they would never treat me this way.
Yeah.
And then I usually take that and I take that to the person. I say, hey, like, I know that when you're feeling good with things and you're feeling good with things between us, you would never speak to me in that way or you would never do this thing. So I'm just curious what's going on, like what's hard for you right now that's led to that happening, because that was really hard for me.
Mm-hmm.
And like, oh. Yeah, what's that?
I aspire to have your patience. I'm so attracted and repulsed by your copious amounts of patience. And boy, you're a good-hearted woman, and I still have much snark to sort through.
I don't know if it's patience, and maybe it has turned into patience, but I think it came as a coping mechanism initially, because it's a way to sort of get someone's defenses down, because I was terrified of conflict. And it was a way of coming back into connection, which is what I craved. Like, it felt really uncomfortable to have a ruptured connection for me. So I think it stemmed from that. That skill set stemmed from that. And then now I get to be more conscious and aware of when I use that and when I don't use that. I probably use that to an extreme before, where now it's just like, yeah, no, like that's just not cool. And I don't want to sit here and talk us through that every single time, because it's always on me to walk us through and have these conversations. Like, I would like some ownership on your part to like not do this all the time, or for you to facilitate these conversations sometimes. And that's not always me doing it. So I think it just built over time, and it's more of I desire peaceful connection if I'm going to be in relationship with you. Otherwise, I think I'd rather just be out.
Yes. Yeah. Draw up the anchor. Get out.
Get in the lifeboat.
Yeah. Head to peaceful waters. God.
Well, that's also something I've learned, is like, I need to head in the life raft sooner.
Yeah. Yeah. You can hang right on to that boat for a little. You got a good grip. You're a strong woman. Patient. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, that's the, you know, if you want to call it downside, that's the other impact of, you know, when you're too willing to talk it out with someone, you're too willing to see it from their perspective all of the time.
Yeah.
It put me in a situation of staying in relationships for too long.
Yeah. That's, and so I want to honor the natural pendulum swing of humans, right? If we've had that experience, which I certainly had had, then we swing the other direction and jump to, you know, leaving the boat more quickly than is necessary, and then we settle. I feel like I'm coming to a place of settling with that. And just wanting to make sure I'm behaving as consciously as I can in my boat.
I would like you to put a slide on your boat so that sometimes you could have some fun and go for a slide.
Oh, a slide on? Oh, yes. Yeah, right into the choppy waters. Get strangled by the old anchor cord in the stormy water.
I'm thinking that you're in that peaceful Mexican beach.
Oh, yes. There is actually a boat there with a slide. And I wish I was there. Yeah. You know, and that's kind of also a funny metaphor, because I would love so much to be just standing in that lovely blue water right now, even though I know that everybody is peeing in it.
Tell me more about this metaphor.
So I'm like, get me out of the stormy seas, but put me into the pee water? I mean, I wouldn't get in just any pee water. It's pee water on a beautiful beach. There are, you know, pina coladas. It's warm. It's sunny. So I guess what I'm saying is that there are exceptions to every rule. And, water doesn't need to be pristine to be enjoyed.
Good.
And pee is antiseptic, so that's good.
Yeah, I'm curious to discover how that relates to your life over time.
Yeah, it feels like a longer game. Out of the stormy season into the pee water, the story of Stephanie's life.
Okay, I await the release of that.
Amazing. Oh, great. Is there anything else you want to say about feeling personally attacked?
Well, I like, you know, how you started with, like, it's this sort of facetious thing. We say, oh, I feel personally attacked. I think there was a time where I would have felt actually personally attacked and felt bad about myself, like reading something that described me or having someone say it to me. And now I just feel so seen and happy. I'm like, yes, this is my experience. That is how I am. That is how I'm wired. That is what's hard for me. And I almost get excited when I come across memes that where I feel personally attacked. So I'm like, oh, that's me.
Yeah.
Feels nice.
It does feel nice.
Validated.
So the other day, this guy came over to switch my shower head, and we ended up having tea in this lovely conversation. And it turns out he's got a podcast called Satisfying Intimacy. And so we talked about, you know, all of this kind of work. And so I went and listened to one of the episodes, and I sent him a message after saying, I feel personally attacked. It was an episode about falling in love and like the vulnerability there. And the piece that stood out to me the most, I think, was him talking about how he loves to like go deep with people, and the like literal and figurative disrobing of a person, you know, discovering everything about them and going deep. And he's like, but then when it comes time to take my clothes off, my literal and my metaphorical clothes, then I'm like, oh, hang on, like we're getting into scary territory here, you know? And that really resonated with me a lot.
Mm-hmm. I think that can resonate with a lot of people, right? There is a vulnerability in falling in love and letting someone see you and like disrobing physically, energetically, emotionally, really allowing yourself to be seen. And I feel like that's such an irony, because a lot of us have felt very unseen in childhood and in relationships, and claim to want to be seen, and then forget that it can be really uncomfortable to actually be seen, because it can stir up so many of the fears of what if I'm seen and not accepted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that subtle difference we develop between the joy of being seen and the fear of being seen, really. Yeah, that's what you're kind of describing when you talk about the delight of discovering personal attacks.
And like holding both, that there is joy and fear in being seen.
Yeah.
And then being able to lean into what is your truest desire and opening more to that.
A dynamic that's target.
Hard.
Yeah.
Hard work for me because I wanted to be seen, but I wanted to be seen for like this mask, right? Like, I think this is the mask you will like. And if I let you see that and all of those shiny pieces, then you'll like me and you'll stay. But I don't know about showing you all these other pieces and trusting that you won't use it against me, right? Trusting that you'll be able to see me as a whole and not just this piece that you now discover about me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good conversation.
Yeah. Thanks, personally attacked.
Yeah. Do you have a closing practice?
Yeah. So I'm going to save that other one for another time, but we're going to go back into our boats.
Okay.
You go back into your boats in the most ideal circumstances for you, whatever that means.
Where's some a way bigger boat? Like,
yeah. So let's create that image for yourself. Now you are in a boat. Mm-hmm. You get to create the image where you feel the like really, really good in this boat. So what area are you in? What kind of water? Is it like a Lego boat on land? Like, it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
And this is a little exercise. And can you create comfort for yourself? Mm-hmm. Right? Can you create the best feeling boat scenario for yourself?
Funny. I'm a non-COVID cruise ship harbored somewhere sunny and calm.
Beautiful. Okay. Mm-hmm. So see if once you connect to, you know, some version of a boat experience that you enjoy, see where you notice in your body that it's the right boat for you. And see if you can allow yourself to enjoy that for a moment.
Just highlights how much I'm not a boat person. I am not a deep seafaring woman. I'm like, I love being on this boat. I'm imagining because you can't even tell it's a boat.
Perfect. That's good to know. But you're enjoying it, right? You're enjoying your non-boat-like boat?
Yeah.
Great. So that's what we're going after is just, can you feel a sense of enjoyment in your body when you've tweaked it enough that you're like, oh yeah, that's it. That's the way it needs to be.
Yeah.
And then the next piece is, can you remind yourself you can get off anytime or sail away anytime? And you get to decide when that moment is.
Wow. The immediate visual I had is of being able to just like step overboard into water that's obviously not deep enough for a boat to be in. Like, it's like ankle deep. I'm like, gotta go. And I can.
But I think this is a good metaphor in life because often we think like we're stuck.
Yeah.
And I either can't get off or I can't move forward. Mm-hmm. And that's not actually the truth. Mm-hmm. It might look a little bit different than what you had imagined or hoped. But you're not actually stuck in all of the ways.
Yeah. The boat I would have imagined before when I was a person who stayed too long probably would have like issued myself all these unconscious, unnecessary challenges. Like, yeah, I'm going to be in like the boat that's being tossed around in the most challenging circumstances. Like, unnecessary. I like my current version better.
I like hearing about your current version. But I also like this exercise for like noticing, what would I change to make it better? And then noticing, hey, if I changed this, how would that feel? And like really feel it in the body. If I like, it was a boat so big that I didn't feel like a boat, how would that feel in my body? It was a boat where I knew for sure there was no COVID on it, how would that feel in my body? If it was a boat where I could step over the side at any time and be safe, how would that feel? And like each one of those things helps you notice your body's reaction. And each one of those things reminds you, like, there's something to tweak that could make a difference for the better. What might it be? Right. And you don't have to know, you didn't have to know immediately what was your ideal boat, but you got to make incremental changes to this vision of a boat. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's life.
Yes.
Oof.
So many personal attacks from you today.
Planned it this way because I'm so well intentioned. I wanted you to get the most out of things.
Thank you. That was great. Okay. Anything else you want to add before we sign up?
No, maybe just an invitation to notice what feels good for you. If you could add in a tweak into your current situation in your life, what is one small thing that would feel good? And as you imagine it or say it out loud, how does your body let you know that that would be something that feels better?
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Maybe I'll take a moment to say that this is the kind of work we do together in our program, Priming the Body for Peace, getting to know our bodies, our responses, what incremental baby steps would feel better so that we can create a life and more peace in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. To be on the boat of your dreams.
The boat of your dreams. Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you everybody for being here and we'll see you next time. Please do like, follow, and subscribe. And if anything we've said here today has been helpful for you, please share with somebody that you care about. We'll see you next time.
Bye.